Please to Joshua chapter 5. Joshua chapter 5. So good to be with y'all this evening. It has been a hot day, but it's always good to come together and worship our God together. I appreciated so much Brother Randy's message this morning. He challenged me to have a heart that's more longing for God and His Word, and appreciate the admonition from one of my shepherds to serve God more faithfully, and really appreciate the message he had. This evening, what I'd like to do is to study a short text in the book of Joshua. So let's go ahead and read the text, and then we'll do some analysis of it. Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." And Joshua fell on the face of the earth and worshipped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. What I'd like to do this evening is talk about the song we just sang, "The Battle Belongs to the Lord," and talk particularly here about the commander of the Lord's army. This to me has always been an interesting story with a really unusual answer to the question. And so I really want us to look at this idea of how the battle belongs to the Lord and see what lessons we can glean from the commander of the Lord's army in this case. So as we look at a basic overview of the book of Joshua, Joshua is thematically all about God keeping his promise of the land. As you go over to Joshua chapter 21, if you look in Joshua chapter 21, this is after they have had many of their battles. The text says in verse 43, Joshua 21, 43, "Thus the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it, and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given them all their enemies into their hands. Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass." So you'll notice it says in the very beginning of this text, the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to their fathers. We've been studying on Wednesday night about the covenants, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's hearkening back to the promise God made in Genesis 12, renewed in Genesis 15, renewed in Genesis 17, renewed in Genesis 22, that God was going to give the land to the descendants of Abraham. And by this time, the sin of the Canaanites is complete, Genesis 15, and God then was ready to give the land to the people. So what we see in Joshua is God fulfilling his promise. The book of Joshua has two major sections to it. The first 12 chapters are all about Israel conquering the land. So as you look at these basic 12 chapters, they're all about battles that are fought. There's very few details of some of the battles. We have overarchingly the Battle of Jericho described, the Battle of Ai described, a couple other minor battles. But overarchingly, the majority of the rest of the book then focuses in 13 through 24 on division of the land. Now, if you've never read through Joshua 13 through 24, this is a good bedtime reading. And what I mean by this is a list. As you read, like, for example, in 1 Chronicles, the first 9 chapters of 1 Chronicles is all chronologies. I know Valinda eats it up, and I am so glad to have someone who can tell me who the great-grandfather of Uzziah was. But this is kind of like that chronology type reading, where you have these people get this land, and these people get this land, and these people get this land, this east of this place, and west of this place, and north of this place for 12 chapters. And it's a pretty tedious reading. And I think it's interesting, at least, to note that what's interesting about this is really, I think, what God's doing through Joshua in this case, is he's showing that God had given all the land to Israel, and it's really showing all the completeness of the promise. And so the reason God has very little, comparatively, text about battles themselves, there's much more about the preparation for the battles than the actual battles, and then there's a lot of information in the aftermath of the battles, is God's really showing, "I've prepared them, and I've delivered the land to them." And so what God's doing is he's really giving them the land in this book. One other note about the book of Joshua. Overarchingly, the children of Israel are more faithful in the book of Joshua than any other Old Testament book. Except for the sin of Achan at the Battle of Ai, you really don't have sin that's recorded in Joshua. It's overall a very faithful book. Now, you contrast that with the book of Numbers, where they're wandering in the wilderness. You contrast that with the book of Judges, where there's that constant cycle of sin and deliverance. You contrast that with the book of Kings, where the kings are like this. The book of Chronicles, the kings are like this. Overarchingly in Joshua, the people are pretty faithful. And what you see is the faithful people are delivered a faithful land from a faithful God. And that's what you see in Joshua. Well, right before they're given land, we read again of this story in Joshua chapter 5. Let's go back and read the text again. It's pretty short. Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, "Are you for us or for our adversary?" So let's know what happens here. Joshua at this point is by Jericho. And as he's by Jericho, he looks up and he sees a man with a drawn sword in his hand. And so when Joshua sees this man, he literally thinks it's a human soldier with a sword in his hand. He asks him a natural question, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" Now, I mean, think of what Joshua's going to do here. If this man says, "I'm for you," great. Joshua keeps his sword away. What do you think would have happened if this man had said, "I'm for your adversaries"? I mean, most likely, I think what Joshua was really trying to find out here was, do I need to kill you or not? Am I going to have to defend my life against you? So Joshua is asking a very logical question. Here's a man who has a sword in his hand. Do I need to get my own sword out and engage in battle, or am I safe? Well, whenever he then asked the question, the man then responds, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." So when you look at what's occurring here, this to me is just a strange occurrence for various reasons. Let's get a context though, first of all, about why this man is saying no. I want us to understand why this man is saying no and what all this means. As you go back to chapter 1 of the book, God gives Joshua a very direct command and various admonishments about how he needs to lead the people of God. So it says in Joshua chapter 1, I'm going to read just a few verses from this section. This is really God's major address to him. Joshua 1:1. "After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant," one also really cool note about that, I love the book of Joshua. As you look at Joshua 1:1, it's called Moses' servant. Moses, throughout the books of law, is typically called the servant of the Lord. At the very end of Joshua, Joshua 24, Joshua is then called that. So after he has fulfilled God's command that he would do and deliver the land to them, he then becomes essentially the new Moses. He is the one who becomes the servant of God, just a cool textual note. Verse 2, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go into this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I'm giving you to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I've given to you, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea, toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you against all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous." God commands him here, you are going to be the commander. So just as Moses was the one who led the children of Israel through the Red Sea out of Egypt, you are going to be the one who then delivers them into the land. And as you look again at contextually at where Joshua 5 is, in chapter 1, you have God giving this command and the people preparing. Joshua commands the people to prepare. Chapter 2, they send the spies to Jericho where they meet Rahab. So they send the spies really before everyone else crosses and they set up the memorial stones. But they had been preparing for this battle of Jericho for a good long time, at least a few weeks. I'm not sure exactly how long it would be. The text doesn't give all the details there. But for a good while, they'd been preparing for this battle of Jericho. And the commander of the Lord's army comes to Joshua right before they begin battle in Jericho. Chapter 6, verse 1 is where the battle of Jericho begins. Now, that's a story we know from childhood, right? They march around the city 7 times, and then the walls come tumbling down. Y'all want to sing it with me? We know, of course, in Jericho, the very first battle that you have inside the land, this is where God delivers the great first victory to the people. So God had commanded Joshua, "Joshua, you're my commander, you lead my people." And then this commander of the Lord's army appears to Joshua really right before their first battle in the land. They had had the king of, they'd had Og and another king, Sion, I believe, back in the earlier Israel had battled. But within the land, this is going to be the first time they have a true battle against the Canaanites. So this commander appears to Joshua right before battle begins. And so I think it really helps us to understand whenever this commander then says back in Joshua 5, Joshua said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" He said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." So Joshua was wanting to find out if this man was going to be an adversary he needed to kill or a comrade that he could trust in. And he really doesn't get either answer from this man. He answers no. Now, again, this answer is just confusing, I think, from multiple perspectives. I mean, if I were to ask, who can I pick on tonight? Kelson, you're back with us. If I could ask Kelson, y'all, which one do you like better? Chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? No. Okay? Which one do you like better? Pepperoni pizza or sausage pizza? No? Okay? Great. What do I do with that information? You really don't learn anything. So, you know, I have a pretty clear dichotomy. Which one do you like better? And then there's really not an answer given. And so he says, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I've come." This man gives to Joshua a higher answer than he could have expected. Joshua was wanting to know, "Are you for us, where you're going to help me? Or are you for my adversaries, where I'm going to kill you?" This man says, "No, neither of which." Well, who is this commander? As we end verse 14, Joshua fell on the earth and worshiped him and said, "What does my Lord have to say to his servant?" There's various ideas about who this man is, but there's only one that really makes sense to me. I think this man shows God's presence to Israel before the battle begins. Now, there's a couple reasons I think this is an appearance of God. There are some who've said that this is an angel. Perhaps this is an angel of the Lord. A couple reasons I don't accept this. Others think it's just another heavenly host. But I think this is really an appearance. It's called a theophany of God himself appearing to the people, showing that his presence is going to be with them. Now, the first reason I think this, and the major reason, is the commander accepts worship. Verse 15, "The commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, 'Take off your sandals from your feet, and the place where you are standing is holy.' And Joshua did so." So he tells him, "You're standing on holy ground." And right before that, Joshua fell to the earth and worshiped him. The only being in entire scripture that accepts worship is God himself. When John tries to worship an angel in Revelation, John is commanded, "Do not." Angels are not to accept worship. Spiritual beings beyond God himself do not accept worship. The only being in the entire Bible that accepts worship is God. And so I really think this is an appearance of God to Joshua himself, just as God had done with Moses. You remember back at the burning bush in Exodus chapter 3. Back in Exodus chapter 3, when Moses is in Egypt, the burning bush comes to him in verse 5. And it says in verse 5, this is the Lord here. Let's start in verse 4. "When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bushes, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here am I.' Then he said, 'Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground.' And he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, and he was afraid to look at God." So in Joshua 5, it says, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you're standing is holy." And then it says of Moses, "Do not come near, take off your sandals, for the place in which you are standing is holy ground." Essentially the same language. So I think what's happening here is this. God is showing Moses, Moses, I am leading my people out of the land, but you're going to do it. You're going to be the deliverer who leads them out. Likewise, Joshua, I am the one who am fulfilling the promise that I made to my servant Abraham 490 years ago. Now, what you're going to do is you are then going to be the one who delivers them into the land and takes them in. God is giving him assurance. Right before he begins battle in Jericho, I am going to be with you. I am going to wage the battle. I am going to be the one for you. And so then, when we get back to the question, why does he answer no? Because ultimately what Joshua is trying to do is Joshua is trying to constrain God. When he says, are you for us or for our adversaries? He says, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. Joshua is asking the wrong question. If this were just a man, Joshua could have asked, are you for me or are you for my adversaries? I'm not for you. Great, let's fight it out. I mean, I think that's the answer he would have gotten. I'm for you. Great. Let's go into Jericho together. But Joshua's trying to constrict God. And Joshua is thinking in human terms, in fleshly terms, in earthly terms, while God is thinking in spiritual terms. So when we try to understand what's going on here, Joshua is seeing at a very surface level. God here is talking at a true deeper level. Because Joshua sees Israel versus our adversaries, that's it. You're either with us or against us. God recognizes that's not the question. The question is not whether I am for you or against you. The question is, are you with me or are you against me? And that, I think, is the real answer. And the reason behind this is God is urging him to think, Joshua, it's not about whether I'm for you or against you. The question is, are you for or against me? And so what God then does throughout the rest of the book is God then gives them the land. We won't take the time to go to these verses, but in Joshua chapter 1, verse 11, Joshua 3, 6, we've already read Joshua 21, 43 through 45. God tells the people, I am with you, I am with you. And because God is with them then, they then have assurance that God will deliver the land to them. So before we get to application, what do we learn from this commander? Well, first of all, let's talk about what we learned from Joshua. Joshua was seeing this in terms of with me or against me. The commander was seeing this in terms of, yeah, that's not the question. The real question is, are you with me or against me? He was taking it to a deeper level. Joshua was asking the wrong question. And for that, God then gives him the right answer. And ultimately, I think the lesson that we have to learn from this is we have to be on God's side. And this is the true lesson, I really think, of the book of Joshua and pretty much the whole Old Testament, is the question is not whether we are on the side of some earthly kingdom, but the real question is, am I with or for God? So just like I said, it's not with or against Joshua, but with or against God. Ultimately, the battle itself was not Israel versus Canaan, but God versus his adversaries. And that's why God made the promise to them back in Joshua 1, repeated in Joshua 6, fulfilled in Joshua 21, that I am going to be the one to give you the land. You're not going to get this of your own volition. You're not going to get this by your own will, but I am going to be the one to give you the land because ultimately this is my battle. And likewise, I would argue, we should seek to be on the side of Christ, not try to put him into earthly battles. Let's turn to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11. As we go to Luke chapter 11, Christ here is speaking. And he makes a similar point. Luke 11 and verse 21. Luke 11, 21. When a strong man, fully armed, guards his own palace, his goods are safe. But when one stronger than he attacks him and overcomes him, he takes away his armor in which he has trusted and divides his spoil. Whoever is not with me is against me, and whoever does not gather with me scatters. Christ here says very directly, whoever is not with me is against me, and whoever does not gather with me scatters. So, brethren, the question for us is, are we on the side of God or are we against the side of God? I remember a few years ago, Captola and Bob had us over, and we were coming about 4 years ago. And I had a chance to talk to Bob in detail about, you know, why was he a Christian? And one thing that surprised me was to find out that Bob was converted and baptized into Christ when he was older. Captola told me he was in his upper 50s whenever he was brought to God. And I asked him, I said, you know, Bob, why did it take you that long? You know, what was it that when you were in your upper 50s that just clicked to where you knew that you needed to be baptized? And he said, ultimately for me, I realized there's a good and there's an evil, and you're only on one side. And for 50 years of my life, I was on one side, so I needed to get on the right side. And that just had a deep impact on me. Just to think that a man had recognized that ultimately in this life, there's good and there's evil. And ultimately the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we on the side of good or are we on the side of evil? Are we on God's side or are we an adversary of God? That's our only option. And I'm afraid too often we make the mistake of Joshua and we try to constrain God. I mean, you take nearly any realm. People try to argue that God is on my side. God's on my side, right? Well, that's just the wrong question to ask. I mean, for so often, I've heard arguments about, you know, is God with one denomination or is God with another denomination? That's the wrong question. That is the utterly and complete wrong question. The question is not whether God is for us or against someone else. The question that we must ask ourselves is, am I in the church that I'm with for God or against God? That's the question we have to ask. I mean, you're taking me into the political realm. Is God a Republican or a Democrat? That's just a foolish question. It's a foolish question. Because we should not try to constrain God. The question that should be asked is, which one is on the side of God and which one's against him? What ideas are for God? What ideas are against him? Rather than trying to constrain God to human-made and earthly ideas, recognizing God is the eternal and great spiritual good, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we conform to that good, or are we an adversary of that good and then necessarily on the side of evil? Which one is it? And likewise, when we look at the spiritual battles that we face, brethren, our battle that we face is similar to Joshua's in that we must fight for the Lord, but it's very different in nature. As we go to Ephesians 6 and we look at the armor of God, so often I looked at all the different parts of the armor, but I never understood why we are commanded to fight. And it tells us in Joshua chapter 6, verse 10, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against authorities, against cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Brethren, that's a powerful verse. Some point in the near future, we'll talk about the spiritual realm. It's a topic I've never talked about from the pulpit, but it interests me a great deal. There are battles that are waged in the spiritual realm that we can't even begin to comprehend. They're seen a bit in the book of Jude and Ephesians 3 as well. But there's battles that are fought in the spiritual realm that our minds can't even grasp. And ultimately, just as Joshua was not fighting against the Canaanites, Joshua was commanded, fight against the adversaries of God. People who had left God, these are the people you're fighting against. You're not fighting against the enemies of Israel, you're fighting against the enemies of God. Likewise, the battle that we wage is we wage battle against the adversaries of God and against the forces of evil. And as it tells us in verse 12, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. And isn't that what Joshua was trying to do? Joshua was trying to say, are you for me or against me? Are you in the flesh for me or against me? That's not the question, Joshua. The question is not whether I am with you or against you, but rather the question is, we wrestle against rulers, against authorities, against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. I would take all of these to be spiritual in nature. I really don't think he's talking about earthly kingdoms and earthly authorities here. It really seems to be a spiritual verse, but we'll talk about that sometime because it's really intriguing. But brethren, the battle that we wage is ultimately over the cosmic powers over this present darkness and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. That is the battle that we must wage. And brethren, I'm afraid that Christians in general, and I'll talk to myself for a second, we are so worried about what organizations, whether it be political, socioeconomic, what have you, etc., I don't care, are for God or against God, that ultimately we forget the question we have to ask is what's on the side of God and what's against the side of God. We cannot constrain God to our own fleshly ideas, but letting the goodness of God transcend and then recognizing, are we with God or are we against him? And that's the question we must ask. And brethren, I believe firmly the greatest battle that each of us here this evening will ever face is not the battle against human institutions, but the greatest battle that we will face is the battle against sin on a daily basis. And that's the battle that I need to be worried about. Rather than being consumed about all the other battles that are being fought in this world, I need to be consumed about Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock about what my mind is thinking about. Am I being faithful? Am I being righteous? Am I being loving? Am I being pure? The greatest battle that I will ever have to fight is not a battle against anything of this world, but the greatest battle I will have to fight is a battle within my spirit and a battle of the flesh that is fought of the spiritual realm against the forces of darkness, that I fall not into sin. I have fallen into sin far too often, and for that reason, God has given me his grace. But the battles that I have lost in the past, I cannot lose those battles. I have to be on the side of God and on the side of the spiritual forces of good and against the spiritual forces of darkness. Brethren, the greatest battle you will face this week is not the battle of against any other man or woman or child, but it is going to be a battle of how do you use your tongue? Do you use your tongue to glorify God and praise him, or do you use your tongue against the spiritual forces of evil? The greatest battle you will face is not against any other institution, but it's a battle about what will your mind dwell on. Will your mind dwell on things of love and faith and purity, or will your mind dwell on hate and anger and wrath? The greatest battle you will face is not a battle against any other thing of this earth, but it is a battle about whether my actions will be out of the love that follow the spiritual forces of good, or whether my actions will be of actions of hate that follow the spiritual forces of darkness. That's the battle that we face. And brethren, we don't think of ourselves as soldiers. We don't think of ourselves as foot soldiers of the cross, but we are foot soldiers of the cross who are fighting a spiritual war. And soldiers cannot become stagnant in this war. Soldiers cannot allow darkness to prevail. Soldiers cannot allow the spiritual forces of darkness to overcome, but we have to be constantly fighting. With the sword of the Spirit in our hand and the armor of God that entrenches us, we have to fight the battle. Because ultimately the battle we must face is, am I myself on the side of God, or am I myself on the side of Satan? And that's what the commander of the army of the Lord was telling. Joshua, your question is not whether I am with you or against you. The question is, are you with me or are you against me? So brethren, let me ask you this question. Are you for us or for your adversaries? Is this the question we should really ask? You know, if we today were to ask God, are you for us or are you for our adversaries? What question should we ask? Turn it around. Am I for God or am I for the adversaries of God? It took Bob 50-something years to come to the realization that he was on the wrong side of this battle. And he had the integrity and the faith and the conviction to accept the grace of God, to be humbled under this gospel of Christ, and then to fight for the spiritual forces of good for the rest of his life. And now we have a hope of where he is and where he rests on the side of eternal good for eternity. Brethren, what battle are we going to wage this week? If you will, go ahead and get out your songbooks, please. My challenge this evening has been for us to think different, to not think of terms of this world, to not think in terms of the flesh, to not think in terms of blood, to not think in terms of what is earthly, but to think in terms of that which is spiritual. And this is a difficult mindset. I mean, inherently it's difficult because we ourselves live in the flesh, right? I mean, we see the flesh, we can see blood, we see the things that are physical, that are tangible, that are empirical, but we can't see the things that are spiritual. And so often we forget, I'll speak for myself, let me not use we, but so often I forget that my battle is not against man, but my battle is ultimately is against the spiritual forces of darkness. And that is an intimidating battle, because that is a battle that has Satan as their commander. It has the ancient serpent who first brought mankind and womankind into sin. That same evil commander who had the evil fruit in the garden in the fall of mankind is the same one that is tempting me on a daily basis to follow him and to serve him and to go on his side. Brethren, what choice will I make? Am I going to be on the side of God, or am I going to be on the side of evil? If anyone needs to be on the side of good, to respond to the Lord's invitation, or you need to come back, and you want to take up the sword of righteousness and fight once more for the side of God, come forward while we stand and while we sing.